World Arts Foundation and KBOO would like to invite you to the 34th anniversary and tribute to the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., entitled We've Come This Far, Keep Alive the Dream. On Monday, January 21st, 2019, from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center, 7600 Northeast Gleason Street. There'll be a host of civic leaders, choirs, the Jefferson Dancers, and of course, our own Victory Village Marketplace. Again, keep alive the dream. Monday, January 21st from 11 a.m. until 6 p.m. at the Highland Christian Center, 7600 Northeast Gleason, presented by the World Arts Foundation and broadcast live by KBOO Community Radio.
This is KBOO Portland. Coming up next at 9 o'clock, Veterans Voice Radio deals with matters of war and peace, health issues, and the after effect of war. At 10, Valley Views looks at how two-party political system thrives while freedom of choice dies. At 10:15 is Flashpoints with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, Radio Zine host Ken Jones talks to the authors of Formosa Moon, which is the story of their move from Portland to Taiwan. At 11:30, Making Contact explores safe at-home abortion options and the growing movement for self-managed abortions. All of this KBOO programming is made possible by member support. If you're not a member and you would like to become one, go to kboo.fm and click on Donate.
Cable Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Counter Rally for Reproductive Justice on Saturday, January 19th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square in Portland. On the 46th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, this rally is in support and solidarity with all people who have considered, are considering, or have received abortions. It is a protest of the Rally to the Oregon Right to Life March and will celebrate our victories in imagining a future where every person has access to the reproductive health care they want and deserve. Again, that's the Counter Rally for Reproductive Justice on Saturday, January 19th from 1 to 4 p.m. at Pioneer Courthouse Square on the southwest corner at Morrison and Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Say it again. Listen to me. War. It ain't nothing but a heartbreaker. War. Friend only and the undertaker.
Sisters and brothers, welcome to Veterans Voice Radio Show on KBOO 97.8 FM here in Portland in the Vancouver area, 104.3 FM in the Willamette Valley, and 91.9 FM in the Columbia River Gorge, or on the World Wide Web at KBOO.FM. And you can also go on our KBOO.FM and slash Veterans Voice, and you can hear some of our older shows. I'm Marvin, and today we're going to do some talk about some different things. I'm going to play some songs, and then I want to talk about them afterwards. That, you know, war is very, it really hits right to the point. You know, what do you get from war? You get nothing but death, destruction, and hate, you know, and it just solves nothing. I was talking to my new friend Christy. She's a respiratory therapist up at the VA, and we were having dinner last night, and we were talking, you know, and she said, you know, war is not, doesn't solve a thing, you know. It just kills people and destroys the land of places, and you know, takes food away from children and all that, and you know, that really, really comes to the point about war and death and destruction caused by war. And as the weapons get better and stronger, more people get killed and more civilians die. And you know, we think about, look in Yemen right now, what's going on in Yemen with the Saudi Arabia bombing Yemen and all the children and older people that are dying, and what is that going to solve? It's going to solve nothing. They're going to quit, you know, bombing, and the country's going to try to heal itself, and the political parties will still hate each other and kill each other. You know, nothing's going to help. I was going through some interesting stuff, and Before I start this, I just want to talk a little bit about Dr. King. You know, he was one of my heroes, and I was in Vietnam when Dr. King was killed, and he was murdered, and we were out in the field, and we didn't know anything about it, until they brought us back in, and we found out that back at the base camps, at the fire support base that they brought us, there had been fights between our black brothers and white guys, and they had to call the MPs in, and I guess it got to be pretty nasty, you know, on some of the bases in Vietnam when Dr. King was murdered. But not in the field. When you're in the field, you take care of each other. You take care of each other's back, you know. You watch each other's back, and things like that just can't be, and you have to be really thinking about what you're doing out there, because you know every step could be your last. And but Dr. King, boy, he was a hero to me, and every time I hear that, I have a dream. My heart just goes, you know. And I just wanted to talk about that a little bit, and how I felt sorry for my black brothers in Vietnam when they found out. They were just devastated, you know, like the rest of us were. And when Bobby Kennedy got killed, I was out in the field again. I didn't know about it till we got back, and they said that Bobby had been killed, and you know, the my buddies, my black brothers, you know, they really felt bad, and they, you know, said, yeah, it's a sad thing that he really wanted to end this war. And, you know, I thought, well, we're going to end the war, but it's going to take a while, and I have two younger brothers that were coming up and came of age, and I didn't want them over there. So Bobby is a hero also. You know, I'm just so disgusted with what's going on now in our country, especially out of the White House. You know, Trump lost by 3 million votes, popular votes. He won by, you know, he won with Electoral College, and it's just horrible. But one of the things that he did, he went to court to keep our transgender sisters and brothers out of the military. I don't want people to go in the military, but if they want to go, they should be able to go in. It doesn't matter if they're, you know, black, white, gay, trans, whatever, you know, if they want to go in the military, they should be able to go into it, even though I don't want them to. But I guess that the folks that are in the in now, that they can stay in, I think, until they're, you know, their term's up, and then they'll be, you know, they won't be able to reenlist. They'll be brought out, kicked out. It's like the lady I talked to, I was going to be on our show. She was in 11 years, and then she started to trans while she was in the military, and they found out about it, and they kicked her out. So that's a pretty horrible thing. I want us to play song number two.
Soldiers of peace are not fighting a war, are not looking for enemies behind every door, are not looking for people to kill or to maim. The soldiers of peace are just changing the game. Men who were fighting for all of our lives are now fighting for children, for homes and for wives, fighting for the memory of all who fell before. But the soldiers of peace just can't kill anymore. When the people were screaming, losing their lives, when bodies were broken and spirits were torn. But the soldiers of peace do not want you to mourn. So come on, you warriors who live for the fight. Somebody, someone who might have been there
You know, that song's really interesting because about 1967, 1968, when guys had came back from the war, and just the war was just, you know, and at that time the war was at its peak in 68 and 69 when I was there, and the guys were coming back from 65, 66, 67 and starting, you know, peace groups that just, you know, we saw what the war was doing and how unfair it was and how there's no way we should have been there, that, you know, that we were getting killed and civilians and you know, North Vietnamese and Viet Cong soldiers were dying at a high rate of speed. And so they came back and they started Vietnam Veterans Against the War. There was Veterans for Peace, you know, and they were doing huge, you know, rallies against the war. And I was looking at some things about, you know, the deaths in war, the civilian deaths in war. When the Revolutionary War was fought, the death rate of civilians was about what they said about 15 to 20% of the total deaths. And the Revolutionary War, 52,000 people died. And I had one of my ancestors die in that war. He was a soldier, and I had another ancestor. He lived, and for his service in the Revolution, he was giving land, and he lived on that land, and he got a stipends every month too. Not very much, you know, but they gave him a lot of land, and he lived on that land for a long, long time. And there's still down there, there's a Simmons Gap, which was through the mountains and stuff. And yeah, he lived on his land for a long, long time. And a lot of those older Revolutionary War soldiers, they left Virginia and those states that fought in the Revolutionary War, and they came to the newer states, you know, the newer stuff. And and then during the War of 1812, there were 30,000 people killed, and again, 15 to 20% of those killed were civilians. And again, I had an ancestor that was killed in the War of 1812, and his wife was given land and a stipends because her husband was killed in the War of 1812. And like I said, 5 to 15% of that number of the 30,000 were civilians. And then you come to the Spanish-American War, and again in the Spanish-American War, 10,000 people were killed, and again the Spanish and Mexico, you know, that 5 to 15% of those people that were killed were civilians. And then we get to World War One, the war to end all wars, you know, the bloody, bloody battles of that war, and the death and destruction, the use of airplanes, the machine gun, tanks, poison gas, and just devastating. And on that, 16 million people died in that war. And again, out of that amount, 10 to 15% were civilians, you know. They never talk about that, you know. And one thing they don't talk about World War One, there was a lot of women nurses went to served in Europe during that war, and they don't talk much about that. And they don't talk much about when guys were refusing to fight, they, you know, after all those years they were in those trenches, they just had enough, and they just wanted to quit, and they were put before a firing squad and shot, you know. Back in those days, you know, they could do anything they wanted to those soldiers, and they did. And then we come to World War II. My father, like I've said before, my father and my uncles all fought in World War II, and I'm really glad that they all made it, you know. And they all came home, and they would sit around and talk about the war and about, you know, different things. And I thought, boy, I never want to go to war. And there I went. And again, out of that 58 million, again, it was 5 to 15%. No, it jumped. Civilian deaths in World War II jumped up to 65%. 65% of that 16 million were civilian deaths. Civilian deaths. And can you imagine how many refugees there were? You know, World War II, look what the Germans did to the Jewish people. Not only the Jewish people, but also the gypsies, the mentally retarded, you know. Men who didn't accept that were in the military, high officers that didn't become Nazis were sent to prison camps. And the horrible death that went on in those camps is just horrible. And I feel so sorry for those people. And then we come to the Korean War. And again, my uncle was killed in Korea. He was 19 years old. But that was 2.7 million people. And again, 65% of those were civilians. Civilians. I wished I could have known my uncle. I was 3 or 4 years old when he went to war, and I barely remember him coming to our house and telling my dad goodbye and how my dad cried, you know, when my uncle left, and he never came home. And again, out of that 2.7 million people, again, 65% of those people were civilians. And then we get to Vietnam, and in Vietnam, 4.7 million people died, north and south. And you know, soldiers, Viet Cong, South Vietnamese soldiers, North Vietnamese soldiers. And then we jump to 80 to 90% of all those who died were civilians. That's just I can remember, you know, the devastation, because the weapons we had were so much better. You know, we had the B-52 bombers that could drop tons and tons and tons of bombs, and they don't know civilians from combatants. And also, you know, our artillery fire, we had huge guns that could fire miles and miles and miles, and it didn't they didn't know where the, you know, they're supposed to not kill civilians, but they did. You know, it was just horrible. I can still remember you know, after battles, just looking at people that got killed and thinking, man, this is useless, this is nothing, we're going to pack our crap up and we're going to leave, you know, and then we're going to go someplace else and we're going to do the same thing, you know, and then maybe we'll come back to that same area and do it again. And it just didn't make sense. My friends were getting killed. They were stepping on landmines or tripping something, you know, or getting bit by a poison snake or something. It was just useless. And we were having a lot of problems in that. So I want to go ahead and go to the song number 3 and have it.
Cheese, ooh, that point the cannon at you.
That's another good. That's actually the only Creedence Clearwater. That's really the only really hardcore anti-war song that they did. I'll play another one. I'll have another one played by Creedence after just a little bit. Hi, family. Well, Aunt Rose and Uncle Leo, I guess you know by now that I was wounded. Well, I'm doing okay right now. I'm in Japan and at the 249th General Hospital. I'll be here for about 2 weeks, and then I'll be on my way home. I can't walk yet, but as soon as they sew me up, I'll probably start walking. I received my wounds in both legs, in my side and in my back and in my butt, the right cheek. I'm going to have some pretty nice looking scars. The worst one will be on my right leg. All my other scars are fairly small compared to my right leg. Altogether, I think I have 13 wounds. Sounds like a lot, doesn't it? But I'm going to be okay, so don't worry. If I know you, Aunt Rose, you'll probably be worried about me until you see me. But don't worry. I promise you I'm okay. Well, Aunt Rose, how are you and Uncle Leo coming along? Gee, I hope everything is fine and everyone is in good health. How's the kids? I hope they both are feeling well. Aunt Rose, just think, in 2 weeks, I'll be home. Wow, can't wait to see you and Uncle Leo. I miss you very much. Well, family, I guess I'm cutting out of here now. Be good and take care. See you soon, Joey. P.S. Uncle Leo, baby, I hope you reach to get out and get drunk. And that was from Spec 4 Joseph Parisi, who was serving with H Company, 17th Cavalry, 198th Light Infantry Brigade, AmeriCal Division in I Corps, when he was wounded in action on July 4th, 1968. 6 months after arriving in country, lives in Elmont, New York, and works as a bread delivery person. So even though he had 13 wounds, and the biggest one was on his right leg, he came home and he did okay. I got a lot of those, and I'm going to read some of them to you. Letter from Pleiku, and that's where I was. Each of us is a can of tomato paste, and though we may not all have the same label, as we spin through the air, when we land too hard or get torn from the outside or within, we spill out, stain the hands of everyone who knew us. That's from Michael O'Donnell. Michael O'Donnell, then a captain with the 52nd Aviation Battalion, 17th Aviation Group, 1st Aviation Brigade, was declared missing in action when his helicopter he was piloting was shot down in Ben Hat on 24 March 1970. His status was changed to killed in action in 1978, a year after he was promoted to major. And that happened a lot when guys would get killed in action. They would bump them up a rank. When my buddy Bobby Dew got killed in a rocket attack, they made him a sergeant, and Bobby was from Missouri, and he was a great guy, man. He was a hillbilly kid, and he was great. He'd send his money home to his family, and he was just a good kid, and he died, you know. And what could, you know, he would have been home, he would have probably gone to school and got married and had children and had a good life, but that just didn't happen. He it's hard to talk about it, and I miss him. Surprise, Charlton Heston visited our company for a few minutes, and I shook hands with him. He looked like an old farmer, the way he was dressed in old drab green jungle fatigues. He said, almost everybody is back in our land are supporting you. I like beer. Can you think of anything else to say? The new library opened up and air conditioned and quiet. Mike Cheerio Rick was from Rick, Lieutenant Spec 4 Richard Lawfer, 36 Sigma Tide, 2nd Sigma Company, Long Bin, Bin Cat, 1967. Dear Mom, have been having the usual for me sour and aggravating exchanges with senior officers at MACV, Military Command, Vietnam. It is surprising, even to me, how little Army discipline and decorum have influenced me. If anything, I am more sensitive about my freedom and individuality. A discharge near, I am less prone to adhere to silly convention and arbitrary command. I know I'm a bit abnormal about this freedom thing, but I have to accept it, live with it, and humor myself about it. In the past 6 weeks, I've told two majors that if he didn't like my attitude, that was too bad. I paid to work, not to say yes or no, sir, I tell them. They responded furiously, a great deal of shouting, most ungentlemanly. I think were it's not for the Army and the war, of course, Vietnam would be an ideal place to work and live. Love, Jim. Captain Jim Gabe served as command historian for Military Assistance Command, Vietnam, stationed at Long Bin from July 70 through June 71st. He is now a business and financial writer in New York. And that's really interesting, because to hear an officer talk like that, you know that discipline by that time had just gone to heck, you know. Guys in Vietnam were refusing to go on patrols. Guys would not fire their weapons when they were told to. Discipline just went really, really down. And the drugs started coming in pretty strong about 69, 70. And to read that where this captain, you know, we're telling these guys, you know, where they can put it, that's really interesting. And but we didn't have that in 68. Maybe towards the end of 68, we were getting really angry, and guys were talking about doing different things, you know. But I don't remember any of them doing it. But after in 69, 70, 71, there was a lot of officers getting killed by their own guys, and getting fragged and different things like that, because you know, the war, they recognized the war was useless, you know, and then dying was useless. And they just wanted, you know, to get out of there and go home. You know, they didn't want to be the last one to die for a stupid cause. And boy, it really went downhill. I'm going to play the next song. And that's, yeah.
Oh, I thought it was
Run Through the Jungle. That's the other one by Creedence Clearwater, and it, you know, it kind of hit home, you know, because you know, we were in the jungle, or we were up in the mountains in Vietnam. There's tall mountains that we'd go up into, and excuse me, that song just sounds really familiar, you know, very interesting. We got a call about what I thought of conscientious objectors, and I personally don't have a problem with conscientious objectors at all, and you know, in fact, I'm really proud of them. I'm proud of anybody that didn't go to the war, that protested the war. Even my younger brother didn't support the war. My younger brothers didn't support the war, and I don't have a problem with guys that were conscientious objectors. What I do have a problem is guys that didn't go to the war, that send other guys to war. You know, we got one of those in the White House right now. Two Americans just got blown up in Syria, you know, and the guys that got killed down in Africa, and the ones that are killed still in Iraq and still in Afghanistan, and he's sitting in the White House and the people's house, and sending guys to war to die, and he had his chance to go and he didn't go. You know, he had a medical deferment, all that meant was if he could go in the military if he wanted to and they would fix it, and he supposedly had heel spurs, and they would have just taken him off like his doctor did, and he had a college degree, so he'd have been an officer, and he'd have probably been, you know, in some office with nice air conditioner and everything. But now he's sending people to war. George W. Bush did the same thing. Dick Cheney did the same thing. Mike Pence did the same thing. You know, none of them went to Vietnam when they could have, and they didn't go. You know, those are the guys I don't care for and have complete disgust for, you know, for sending people to die. And the man in the Oval Office right now, he has no business being there. He has no idea how a country runs. You know, he's childish. I'm going to, you know, hold this back if you don't give me what I want. And these two guys, you know, just got killed in a bomb blast in Syria, and he's pulling this trash that he's doing in Iraq. I mean, in the White House right now. It's just horrible. You know, I just hate it. Dear Alamo, this is written 12 August 1966. Dear Alamo, thank you very much for your letter. We have fallen into a sort of breathe easy period here and have not had to go out on any very long patrols lately. So I'm sitting down here writing letters like mad and letting my feet breathe again. We have been doing a lot of work in the village lately of the community development type, so it looks as though I will never get away from my Peace Corps days. So this guy had been in the Peace Corps before he went into service. Wow. We must be really messing up these people's minds. By day we treat them ill and fix up their children and deliver their babies, and by night, if we receive fire from the general direction of their hamlet, fire generally will reach them, albeit not intensively. They must really be going around in a circle. But I guess that just points up to the strangeness of the war. We had two hands, both of which now... We have two hands, both of which know what the other one is doing, but does the opposite anyway. And in the same obscure and not too reasonable manner, it all makes sense, I hope. I am sorry this is so short, but it's going into rain, and I must make sure my men have their gear stored correctly. Love, Sandy. Second Lieutenant Marion Lee Kemper wrote the letter to his grandmother, Mrs. Marion Levy, 1 month after he arrived in Vietnam, where he served as a platoon leader in Company M, 3rd Battalion, 7th Regiment, 11th Marine Division, operating out of July. He was killed on August 11th. He was killed on 11 November 1966. You know, man, what will become of us? There is no answer, only the sound of the wind moving through dead trees and choking dust rising beneath our beneath our feet. The furnace burns throughout the day. We suffer in agony as women in labor. We die with the birth before our children is war. Now we fathers must move forward to meet our fate in open fields and jungle paths strewn with death, and call on the name our God, who will not hear our pleas, while pile high the dead into a pale bleached mountain and swing our bloody bayonets skyward to honor the victory. Who looks through the red rimmed eyes, and in time of pain we die, and somewhere other than home our names and faces are one. Under steel helmets fear equalizes, one is one. What would become of us? In the end is hell, and heaven is obscured in our agony of pain. Homeward bound in aluminum tubes, we know that in victory there lies a promise of defeat. This poem was anonymously written, circulated through Spec 4 Barry Reeves' unit. He spent two tours in Vietnam. Wow. From August 66 to August 67 with the 2nd Field Forces at Phan Thiet, and from March 68 to March 69 with the 1st Field Forces at Nha Trang. He worked as an electronic technician and lives at Maple Shade, New Jersey. And he really told it, you know. It was hours and hours and hours of nothing but walking and walking and walking, you know, up mountains, you know, digging in at night, having patrols going out, having listening posts going out, you know, and then just hoping that we didn't get hit. And then next morning, saddling up, you know, heading out, doing the same thing for hours and hours and hours. There's guys that were in infantry units that never, they were out doing, humping the bush and never fired a round, you know. But then there's other infantry units that got hit all the time. So it was just your luck, you know, the flip of the coin that you got, you know, anything could happen. I'm going to go ahead and I want to play the next song. Can you play the next song for me?
Soldiers and Nixon's coming. We're finally on our
I chose that song because I wanted to do that for my friend Joe Lewis. And Joe lives out in Scappoose. And Joe was, I believe he was the first one they shot. And they shot him in the, I believe, in the ankles and in the hip. And, you know, it was just a horrible thing that happened to those people, you know. And I don't know why in the world they gave live ammunition to those National Guardsmen that shot Joe and the other folks. I just when that happened, I was in college, and the college exploded when that happened, and I'm just feel so bad for those people who were killed there, the four people who were killed, and I really feel, you know, I feel sorry for those that were wounded, that have to deal with that for the rest of their lives, and my friend Joe, you know, I really like Joe, and you know, I worry about him. He has, you know, a bad hip now, and I just, you know, he was doing the right thing, and that was protesting the war. And I just, you know, I just really, really, you know, it's just such a hard thing to see what's happening to these folks. I have a lot more songs to play, but I know we're not going to get to all of them. But I want to play one here. Play number 7. Can you get number 7 for me? Okay, play number 7. Go ahead.
While digesting Reader's Digest in the back of the dirty bookstore, a plastic flag with gum on the back fell out on the floor. Well, I picked it up and I ran outside, slapped it on my window shield. And if I could see old Betsy Ross, I'd tell her how good I feel. But your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. They're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. Well, I went to the bank this morning, and the cashier said to me, if you join the Christmas club, we'll give you 10 of them flags for free. Well, I didn't mess around a bit. I took him up on what he said, and I stuck them stickers all over my car and one on my wife's forehead. But your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. They're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. Well, I got my window shield so filled with flags I couldn't see, so I ran the car upside a curb right into a tree. By the time they got a doctor down, I was already dead. And I'll never understand why the man standing in the pearly gates said, but your flag decal won't get you into heaven anymore. We're already overcrowded from your dirty little war. Now Jesus don't like killing, no matter what the reason's for. And your flag decal won't get you into heaven.
That's John Prine, and he was in the Army during the Vietnam War. He went to Germany, and he was a mechanic on equipment like Jeeps and stuff like that. And then when he got out and came back, he was a mailman, and he wrote his songs, you know, while he was walking, being a mailman. You know, I've talked a little bit earlier, you know, this country is at a constant war. They've got troops all over the world, you know, and even when they're, you know, the guys are being killed, you know, and women nowadays, women, I'm so sorry, my women friends and listeners, that I didn't mention that. But these accidents these ships are having, you know, and they run into other ships and people get killed. And it's just a terrible thing that's going on. And we got, as a nation, we've got to put a stop to this, especially what's going on right now, you know. He closes down the government, and all these people are without their money, and the Indian reservations are really going to be hurt because they don't, you know, they really depend on that money to feed them and everything. And this guy, you know, I don't. We got to get together as people. We have to do this. We can't allow this to continually to go on like this. You know, that's not what we are as a country. Our country's been stolen from us, from the working class, you know, from the people who do all the work. You know, we're not getting our fair share. You know, when the richest 1% or 10% own, you know, more than half of everything we have, money we have in this country, that's a really, you know, they're beating us down, and we just got to start sticking up together. And we'll be back on February 15th at 9 a.m. and there it is.
In the morning, grab some coffee on the go. In the car, sit back, turn on the radio. An attack outside of Baghdad, another chopper down. Fights will be at half-mast in the center of the town. The evening news comes on the TV. Two Marines are killed by Planet IED. They attack the convoy, blew a hole in the Humvee. Two Marines are killed, two families left to grieve. Our men and women are dying overseas. In a war that was started, that didn't have to be. The brightest and the bravest just coming of age. Where is the anger? Oh, where is the rage? Where is the anger? Oh, where is the rage? A gray box draped in red, white, and blue. On a tarmac lies a soldier we hardly knew. Brave and patriotic, just 19 years of age. Story in the paper, section B, second page. Join the army to be all he could be. A college education otherwise would never be. Never thought he'd be dying on some foreign shore. Another army chaplain is standing at the door. Our men and women are dying overseas in a war that was started.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor the Northwest Film Center's Real Music Festival from January 18th through February 16th at the Witzel Auditorium in Portland. Films showing this year include Mr. Soul, The Ballad of Shirley Collins, Solo, The Evolution of the One Man Band, Gospel According to Al Green, and many more. Again, that's the Northwest Film Center's Real Music Festival from January 18th through February 16th at the Witzel Auditorium, 1219 Southwest Park Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
And this is KBOO Portland. It's creeping up on 10 o'clock in the a.m., which means in just a moment we'll be hearing Valley Views, looking at how the two political party system thrives while freedom of choice dies. We'll round out the hour with Flashpoints from our friends at KPFA in Berkeley and Pacifica Radio. At 11, Radio Zine host Ken Jones talks to the authors of Formosa Moon, the story of their move from Portland to Taiwan. And at 11:30, Making Contact explores safe, at-home abortion options and the growing movement for self-managed abortions. And this is all possible due entirely to the support of the members of the KBOO Foundation. You're not a member of the KBOO Foundation? You can correct that oversight right now at kboo.fm. You click on the word donate. Right now, here is Valley Views.
Hi, I'm Dale Holliday, coming to you from Corvallis, Oregon, in the bountiful Willamette Valley. Welcome to my show, Valley Views, a forum for sharing relevant topics relating to people and issues in the Willamette region. Hi, folks. Thanks for joining us today. I'm here today with my husband, Max Mania. He recently ran as an unaffiliated candidate for Benton County Commissioner and unfortunately lost. I operate